Welcome to What's Up Bainbridge. I'm your host, Sonia Scare. Today we welcome Tamina Watson, a U.S. immigration lawyer. She is the founder of Watson Immigration Law in Seattle, helping businesses and families successfully navigate the complex field of U.S. immigration law. A U.S. immigrant herself and a naturalized citizen, Watson shares the response committee of the Washington chapter of the American Immigration Lawyers Association. She helped found both the Washington Immigration Defense Network and Airport Lawyer. Airport Lawyer is a web-based application that helps immigrants, refugees, and other travelers connect with volunteer attorneys at U.S. airports. In 2015, she authored the book, The Startup Visa, Key to Job Growth and Economic Prosperity in America. Tamina's new book titled Legal Heroes in the Trump Era, Be Inspired, Expand Your Impact, Change the World, was just published in October. We'll get to hear more about her book momentarily. Tamina, welcome and thank you for speaking with me today.
Thank you so much, Sonia. I'm so honored to be here.
Tamina, you are one of the founding members of the Washington Immigrant Defense Fund, which provides legal services for those in need. Would you please tell us briefly how and why this nonprofit group was created?
Thank you. Thank you so much for asking that question. The Washington Immigrant Defense Network, and we call it WIDEN, W-I-D-E-N, is essentially a network of lawyers that and resources to help immigrants who are detained in detention centers. In immigration law, people do not actually have a right to counsel, which really means that if they are in court, they are not entitled to a lawyer. Over the last 4 years, we have seen immigration laws get restricted in so many different ways. And your listeners might have, you know, heard the news over the last 4 years about how immigration law has essentially been restricted from the border to policies to everything, really, from executive orders to policy memos to regulation changes. What didn't happen was really congressional changes, because we really need the law to be reformed, but we didn't have that. But the executive orders and policy memos resulted in a lot of denials, and ICE meaning the Immigration and Customs Enforcement arm of the Department of Homeland Security, had increased the number of people detained. Now, in the good old days, and I'm talking four years ago, 2016 and before that, detention was still a problem. You know, right to counsel did not exist, still doesn't exist, and the denial rates are very, very high. If you scan the statistics around the country, people applying for asylum cases will often get, you know, there's an 80% denial rate. And that denial rate had shot up in the last 4 years. What we had found was these policy changes, executive orders, was bringing an increased number of people into detention centers. And one of the things that, as part of my work, was really to provide volunteer attorneys to wherever they were needed. And you mentioned Airport Lawyer. That's where it all began. And the Washington Immigrant Defense Network really was the result, a culmination of events where immigration lawyers were being called to assist in all sorts of situations, legal clinics, Know Your Rights events, the airport. Everybody remembers what was happening at the airports. But immigration lawyers simply could not handle the volume of need that existed, especially pro bono. You know, most of the work done by immigration lawyers over the last 4 years in these situations were pro bono. Mm-hmm. And that energy was depleting, and I was the one making the calls, and I could see that the number of responses were dwindling. At the same time, non-immigration lawyers were really trying to help the situation more, but it's a specialized area of law. So if you practice, let's say, general commercial litigation, you're not going to be an effective advocate in immigration law because the law is just so narrowly defined and so specialized. And so Washington Immigrant Defense Network was born because after the separation of parents incident resulted in about 200 or so separated parents brought to Washington State, we needed more lawyers to represent in the courtroom. And so the model was created to help non-immigration lawyers get trained quite fast, and then become really useful to an immigration lawyer who was running a particular case. I had been working on this model for about 18 months when the initial travel ban had happened, because I could see down the road I wasn't going to have enough people to, you know, respond to the calls that were coming in. And so 18 months later, when the separation of parents happened and resulted in our doorsteps receiving 200 people or so, that's when the idea was given life. And so essentially, we represent detained immigrants only, in detained trials only, and the help is given pro bono to the client, but a small stipend is given to the immigration lawyer who would supervise the case as well as the volunteer lawyers. It's a very new model. In fact, I don't believe this particular model is formalized anywhere in the country, but it's the only way in which we can provide assistance to a very desperate and vulnerable group of people. In the end, we do need right to counsel as a government measure, but in the interim, this is a model that is working at the moment and has been very welcome.
And do you collect stats on how many immigrants you see over time, and you know how many are processed, how many are given either asylum or whatever their needs are?
That's a really good question. So our cases come from the Northwest Immigrants' Rights Project, and that's an incredible organization that's been around for a very long time. And to be honest, without them, I don't know where the immigrants in this state and neighboring states would be. They would have a lot of stats. Because we are so new, we were established in June 2018, I wouldn't have an awful lot of stats on our services. However, in Washington State, the Northwest Detention Center has about 1,600 beds. I don't know what's been going on since COVID, but those bed numbers are generally close to full all the time. And when the separation of parents happened, the 200 or so people that were sent from the southern border were housed at this Seattle-Tacoma Federal Detention Center near the airport because there were not enough beds at the detention center. Now, of these people, there are a large number of people applying for asylum, but there are other people who get detained for different reasons. But what happens is these people do not have right to counsel. And statistics will show that if you do not have counsel, and generally speaking, the denial rates by immigration judges are very high, close to 90%, if not higher in the last couple of years. But if you have an immigration attorney at your side, the percentage of success increases 11 times. Wow. And often these people who have representation actually do get relief. And so it is a huge need, and it's protecting due process and human rights that are, you know, have been curtailed over time, but even more so in the last 4 years.
Right. Okay. So you've written a new book, Legal Heroes in the Trump Era, about the experience of mobilizing a group of immigration and non-immigration lawyers during the 2017 administration's executive orders regarding the border security and interior enforcements. There was a big demand for immigration law advice and assistance. What motivated you to capture the truth of what happened and why?
I'm so glad you asked that question. The last 4 years have been a very difficult one, 4 years, not just for me, but my immigration lawyer community. And that's not just because we are immigration lawyers helping our clients, but we have so much knowledge and so much compassion for our clients and community that we cannot help but be out there. So anytime anybody wants assistance, we have been out there. But one of the things that happened for our state particularly, so I'm part of an association called American Immigration Lawyers Association. This is a national organization with 15,000 plus immigration lawyers scattered around the country. And every state has a chapter. In Washington state, we have a chapter of about 550 lawyers. It's probably close to 600 now. And as soon as the 2016 election results came in, it was clear that immigrants were going to face a lot of difficulties. And so I had reached out to our chapter basically saying, you need to give me a committee because we don't know what's going to happen, but whatever does happen, and we know something will happen, we need to be in place. That committee enabled me to essentially be in the right place at the right, be at the right place at the right time, because the knowledge that I have accumulated as an immigration lawyer, as an advocate, community organizer, community supporter, and at the time I had a live radio show, as well as doing a lot of writing, you know, in various publications, I was well known in the community. And I knew that if community folks came to me, I would need to find a solution for them. And that committee would enable me to do that. From an immigration lawyer perspective, a lot of people want to help, but often you need to give a pass for that help to be open. And the committee was exactly the thing that helped us do that. And between November and January, knowing that every policymaker, every lawmaker at every level of our state would need immigration lawyers' input and guidance and knowledge, I knew that the pathway was going to be multifold for the community as well as those who are in leadership positions. And so when we had the committee, it enabled lawyers to, you know, people to call me, and that's how they'd, you know, either email or call. And I would essentially go to our community of lawyers saying, who can help with this particular event? Now, fast forward the clock to 2020, and we had another election upon us. It was very important for me to tell the story of what we've done, not knowing what the election results would be. Because if we were to have an election result that would result essentially in more immigration policy restrictions, we would need to essentially tell the story of what we've done and why we would need more help, or why everybody needs to get in position to help whatever will come in 2021. Now, I also thought that what if the result goes in the way it has turned out, with a Biden-Harris elect, you know, in waiting. And what is so important is these lessons that we've learned are so important for us to take into consideration going forward, because immigration laws already needed immigration reform. It needed reform since the, you know, 70s, 80s, and 90s, particularly in the 2000, you know, era. And we may or may not see those, but what we do know is that people are going to need help, and we're going to need to rebuild all that has been destructed. And to do that, you need everybody on board. And one of the things I wanted to be mindful of is that people need to know that even if we have new leadership and good leadership that is compassionate, we as citizens, as people, residents in our country, really need to continue the work we've done, because leaders can lead us, but we need to be part of the solution. And I didn't want people to forget that we are part of the solution. So the book was really born because I actually did a podcast series. The podcast series came about because, you know, COVID happened and I couldn't go to a studio anymore. And I thought, well, let me just talk to the people I admire and I can learn from them, because there are so many people have done so many things that there's so much to learn from everybody. But I can learn, and that just sits with me. If I were to do a podcast series, everybody could learn. And I'd not done a series before, but this made sense. So in the spring, I started to think about a series, and by the summer, it was in place. And I was very, very fortunate and grateful and privileged to have our Attorney General, Bob Ferguson, on the radio, on the podcast as well, because as people may know, he's been a beacon of hope and an incredible advocate for the people of this country. And so I wanted to learn from him, but I also had a lot of other people who are just lawyers, you know, doing day-to-day lawyering work, who stepped up beyond their day job. Why did they do that? What motivated them? And why do we need to learn from them? And that podcast series was so powerful that after the second, third interview, I realized I need to capture these in a book, because it's, you know, not everybody will listen to a podcast, and the medium of a book will, you know, be memorialized for generations to come. And so I wanted to make sure that there was a record of what has happened. And I have 13 lawyers, and I call them legal heroes, but there are many, many of them in this country. And what's interesting is there are many lawyers who are not legal heroes, and those are the people in the news at the moment. And there's a clear juxtaposition of the type of lawyering that has happened over the last 4 years. And it's really, really important to acknowledge all of that and learn from it and ensure that we all do our part in the future.
I think the topics of the legal world for us in the U.S. has really started to kind of be in the forefront of the news quite a bit more. You know, our current situation with the transition of administrations, and just throughout the entire last 4 years, we seem to always be hearing about some kind of legal battle or, you know, executive orders and such things. So I think it's in the front of our minds much more than it's ever been before. Do you agree?
I absolutely agree. And I think what is so important is the legal community really has upheld democracy over the last 4 years, particularly. And one of the things about the book is that I was very mindful about the types of people I would speak with. I interviewed lawyers of different backgrounds, and these are in-house counsel, big law partner, solo lawyer, you know, in advocacy groups. So some the ACLU Washington chapter executive director is also in the book. I wanted to have a variety of backgrounds because I believe that all of us will be able to see ourselves in one of these lawyers in some way, whether you are a lawyer or not, because these backgrounds are varied, you know, whether we come from a minority background, a low-income background, all of these lawyers have strived to become lawyers, and it's a lot of hard work to become a lawyer, because you want to protect the rule of law and you want to be in a respectable position in society where you can make a difference. And that difference is what has driven every single one of these people. But what we have found is there are a lot of lawyers who have been enablers and who have exploited the law in ways that we wouldn't actually have believed possible. And so the profession as a whole really has come under scrutiny. And I really, truly believe that good always will outweigh bad. But it's important to acknowledge that both of these exist so we understand why lawyering is so important in as a foundation in society. One of the things I say in my book, and I wish I had it in front of me to quote you, but lawyers are protectors of the rule of law, as well as the watchmen and women of democracy. Mm-hmm. And we have seen that happen. The other thing I want to mention is that the lawyers in the book practice different areas of law. And so I wanted to address some of the things that are at the forefront of our minds. So, you know, this summer we saw a lot of racial tension with protests up and down the country. So lawyers address those issues. Immigration, of course, we address that and how different backgrounds of lawyers have made a difference in areas of law that they never thought they would practice in or help in. And then environmental law, so very important. COVID brings to the forefront how important climate change really is, right this moment in history, not sometime in the future. And so one of the lawyers talks about his work in protecting the environment. And so it's I wanted to make sure people understood that law and lawyers affect every aspect of our society, whether it's the food stamps you're going to get or the PPP loan that you're going to get. While these are, you know, issues you hear in the news, they're all embedded in the law. And lawyers are therefore essential to our country, democracy, and our communities.
Right. Well said. I'm going to deviate a little bit from the book at the moment and just ask about your process of writing. Give us kind of an idea of, you know, you had this idea to put together some stories and you wanted to get a message out to an audience. How did that writing style, that process work for you? And how did the book emerge from its form?
That's such a good question. And it's interesting because I've been reflecting on it myself. You know, I have two books, and I believe every author might have a similar story. Each book has its own journey. When I wrote my first book, I wrote it because a client of mine said to me, "Now, you are a champion of this issue. You have so much written. You should make this into a book." And I thought, oh, that's so easy. I have so many blog posts and articles written on the startup visa. This should be a piece of cake. And then I realized very quickly, once I gathered all my material, none of it was coherent to be part of a book, you know. And in the end, you know, I felt I duped myself into this easy book that I was going to write. And I realized that by the time I was done with that, it was very new content, because initially I thought I'd have transition words between posts and articles, and that was not the way it was going to work. And so I also realized an editor makes all the difference. When I wrote my first book, and I had stayed up nights, and at the time my children were very small, so I was working full time, so my hours were late night to morning to write my book. And I found that I was speaking a lot of legal lingo, and I needed somebody who could translate my legal language into layman's terms. And I was very fortunate to have an editor who was a reporter in immigration and, you know, could speak to the masses. And she essentially helped me turn my book into what it is. The first one, the startup visa book. But that journey was so very, very different to this book, because this book came about in the summer of 2020, in the middle of a pandemic, when, you know, we're dealing with so many different issues. But I realized my deadline had to be the 2020 election. And, you know, between the summer and, you know, November 2020, not a lot of time. And so it became a production in the sense that I knew what I was writing, what I needed to do, but I needed a team to help me. So I stayed up between 4 and 6 a.m. for several months, basically writing various parts of the book. And then once I transcribed the interviews, I actually got some editors to help me to put those profiles together. And then I had to go through another editing process, you know, it went through a lot of work. But what I realized I needed, it became a production. And the cover itself was a very interesting story because, you know, I'm very proud of the cover. It tells the story of the last 4 years in just one image. But when I had, you know, some graphic designers help me and I went through this process of, you know, putting a brief out there and getting some samples, I ended up liking two covers very much. And this particular cover that I have for the book that I'll send you tugged at my heartstrings immediately. But when I went through a first round of, you know, group comments, I had a lot of people basically say, this is too dark. If you're going to talk about hope and inspiration and want people to know that they can help too, this is just too dark. And I, even though I realized that this was the right one for me, there was a second image that I really, really loved. And the superhero part of it was very much at the forefront of whatever image it was going to be. So I finalized the other image with Lady Justice walking, you know, striving forward and saving the world. And when I actually then put it onto Facebook, I sort of had, you know, a lot of good feedback. And I thought, okay, well, at that point, I was just really thinking about black versus blue as the background. And I had finalized, I think, the blue, I can't remember. But a flippant post of like, hey, you know, I'm so grateful I'm doing this book, but this is the book cover that didn't make the cut, immediately raised a lot of emotional responses.
Oh.
From it was overwhelmingly clear that this book cover needs to be on the front because everybody was feeling exactly what this image conveyed. And so this book cover journey was very different from my first one, because in the first one, I had a graphic designer who gave me one design. I was super happy with it. Didn't even think I needed to have a second one. But this one, I agonized. I stayed up between my 4 a.m. and 6 a.m. writing period. And then my, you know, day job, all I could think about was what cover do I use?
Incredible.
And so in the end, I am so incredibly proud of the cover and the designer who worked with me to essentially go through all the various different details. And in the end, I have a product that I'm truly proud of that could be part of history for years to come. And even though there are only 13 lawyers that are, you know, profiled, I mention every single lawyer in Washington State that stepped up to help vulnerable people in the last 4 years. Mm-hmm. It's sort of a collection of what really happened so people can remember in the years to come.
Fantastic. So the title, Legal Heroes in the Trump Era, you declare that we will be inspired, that we can expand our impact and even change the world. My guess is there's a common thread in each of the legal heroes of your book. Can you tell us a little bit about what that common thread is?
You know, I just got goosebumps as you asked that question. That the common thread is that people felt compelled to help and they found ways to help. And so all of us have something that we care about very deeply. And you don't have to be a lawyer to care about something. Every one of your listeners cares about something, whether it's education or healthcare or immigration law or anything. And I think what people will take away from this is that you can do something too, whether you are a lawyer or not, because you have to take that one step towards whatever it is that you want to change. And if you've touched one life, you've already made that change. But what you'll find is doing good becomes an addictive thing within you. Because once you realize that you can do good in one area or one thing, that will grow. And one of the interviews that I will point to is the interview of Jill Scott. She's an in-house lawyer. Every single lawyer is tremendous and incredibly inspiring. But one of the things that she will say, or she says in the interview in the book, is that, you know, I'm a mother of two. I've got a full-time job. You know, I'm donating money to the causes I believe in. But as things were becoming worse for the vulnerable communities in my area, I felt I needed to do more. And that's how she got involved in the Widen program that we created. But it made her realize you can do more once you've really set that time aside. Often it's our minds that are holding us back. You know, it's this fear of, I don't know how to do it. But the first step you need to take is just do whatever it is that you are feeling compelled to do, and the rest will follow. And every one of these stories will validate that. Because nobody knows what the end story is. But if you don't start, you'll never even know how you got there. So all of us, and one of the sayings, you know, I as part of my life was in Bangladesh, and one of the phrases, idioms that were always used and translates obviously into English as each drop makes an ocean, every one of us doing something will make that ocean. And the world is at a critical place in this moment in history where we all need to come together. If COVID has shown us anything, it is that we are connected. A tiny invisible virus in a very far part of the world infected the entire globe. It demonstrates that we're connected. There's not even 6 degrees of separation anymore.
Right.
You know, and if that's the case, then you can turn that around and think of it as a positive thing that we are connected, and therefore everything that we do will help each other.
Well, Tamina, I think one word really defines a little bit about this book, and that's the word hope. And I think your writing, I think, is going to give people a sense of hope that people do care, that you can make an impact in whatever way you can. So I think I'm going to encourage readers to go out there and pick up your book and be hopeful for our future.
Thank you. I hope so too. And I think we are very much at a hopeful state now. The vaccines are on their way. You know, I mean, there will be many challenges on as these come up, because you'll have, you know, people who won't take the vaccine. But, you know, again, we can all make a difference. All make a difference. Just think of the thing that compels you the most and start doing something about it, and the rest will follow.
So is there anything else before we close that you'd like to share with us? Any messages you'd like to give our BCB audience?
Sure. I mean, thank you for the opportunity for me to share my story. I will say that and reiterate that we can all do something. So think of what compels you. Get up, find out how you can do it, and just do it. This is not a time where you can rely on your neighbors, your friends, your family to go and make the world a better place. You have a part too.
Yeah. Thank you. Tamina's book, Legal Heroes in the Trump Era, is available from our local independent bookstore, Eagle Harbor Books, as well as other bookstore outlets. On our BCB webpage, we'll include links to some of the organizations we mentioned. Tamina, where can people reach you or learn more about you?
Sure. Well, thank you. I just created an author page called TaminaWatson.com, but my main home is my law firm website, which is WatsonImmigrationLaw.com. It will actually list all my podcasts, my books, all the publications I've had over the years, and my email address. I am on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. And the handles are some version of Tamina Watson. And I believe there's only one Tamina Watson in the world, so you can't miss me. And I am so open to encouraging, inspiring. I'm good at pep talks. I tell everybody, if you have an idea, I will pep talk you to death. So, if people have questions, and of course, you know, my day job is to help with immigration law, with people who have any needs. So anything at all, feel free to reach me.
Tamina, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been wonderful speaking with you. So have a great day, and thank you again.
Thank you.
And thanks to our audience for listening to this episode of What's Up, Bainbridge, which is brought to you by BCB, a community service of BARM.